the Charlotte and the trainer, and they, so they saw that because this is quite a bit of an anxious dog, very attached to his human, she has a quite a brittle diabetes, and because she was behind the corner, he wasn't comfortable, that was the interpretation, he wasn't comfortable leaving the woman to go and trigger the alarm. So that was interpreted as a sign that perhaps for this lady, the thing should be wearable on the lady so that the dog doesn't have to leave her to go and trigger the alarm. But I think something different might have also been going on, because in the second go that you have seen, the lady had the black thing is a test kit for diabetes, and the dog was used to normally bring that to the lady. So I think what might be going on, that he was trying to give the lady the test kit while she was, you know, passed sort of on the floor. And maybe he became confused that, you know, what should I do? What should I do? And not knowing, being conflicted, he sat down and said, whatever, I give up. So I, you know, but that, the interpretation of the trainer and the, you know, Charlotte at the moment was that he was uncomfortable leaving the lady. That's another, I wanted to highlight this because that's another important part of our work. We have to rely part on what we observe from the dog, but also on what the report of the people who train them, you know, those, the expert, the field experts, where, so, which adds, you know, it's another stratification which adds to the challenge. Now, this is another, quickly, to show you the training more advanced with a different dog. So, like this. So she's collapsed, and on her own, the dog goes and gets the thing and brings it back. So that's the convention that then they decided the dog comes, brings it back, and sits and waits for help to come. So now, this is the latest version of the, I'll skip a lot of stages, but the latest version is this, very compact. There is, obviously, this is the sausage thing. There is a trigger to pull it off when the dog uses it. There is a right, that's where the person can, you know, annul the alarm. If they mistake, if there is any mistake, the person is awake, that can do. There is, there is audio, because if the dog, by mistake, triggers it while the person is in some other room, that the person can hear it. And there is another form of feedback for humans. So that's it. But these are the various possible versions for the dogs. And the trigger can also be made harder or softer to pull, because you may have a small dog, a big dog, an energetic dog, a more, you know, a gentler dog, and so on. So this is the alarm being deployed in a home with somebody with diabetes, and the dog is, you know, is sort of using it. So now this to me brings up other questions, another question still in the, on the theme of thinking outside the human box, which is, how can we design to enable autonomy of other, you know, animals other than humans, so that we have a more, so that they have a way of influencing, you know, our world as we, you know, a bit more like we do, so that we have a more of a multi-species society where, you know, there is a bit more, I don't want to say equality because we are all different, but there is a bit more balance in between different agents. So in this case, clearly the dog is doing a job that was done to him, so there is, you know, is the autonomy is very marginal, but there is, you know, there is a line of thinking that we, that one could pursue to do with how can we design our cities, our environments, so that non-human animals can autonomously interact with them, which means they can make sense of them and they can do something with them and exert some control. Like that final project that I wanted to tell you about is to do with, this is another project with cancer detection. So with cancer detection dogs, they, again, are trained by this charity, the same charity, but it's a slightly different problem. So, as we, well, we all know that early diagnosis can really change the outcome of cancer. But unfortunately, for some comparatively common cancers, the techniques for diagnosis are still quite imprecise. For example, in a diagnosis of prostate cancer, the PSA test, which is very common, can have up to 75% false positives, and even the needle biopsy, which is very invasive, and can have, can bring all sorts of secondary unwanted effects, as can have up to 30% false negatives. So this is an issue. However, as a form of secondary screening for certain cancers, the charity is training dogs to recognize the presence of organic volatile compounds from cancer cells in biological samples, such as urine, sweat, or breath. And in fact, the dogs have a very accurate, dogs have an extremely accurate olfactory system, much better than that of humans. And from 2004, when the first studies began, the dogs have gradually, with appropriate sort of training protocols, the dogs have approached 90% and come over 90% accuracy in screening samples. So this is very promising, and there is a series of groups. The charity pioneered this worldwide, but there's now different groups all over the world who are trying to develop this approach. So typically the samples are suspended on behind perforated screens, like that, held by support. Usually there is a positive sample on a lineup and the other ones are negative, and the dog goes and screens them and you sort of sniffs them, and then to find the positive one. The other method is one stand at a time where the dog screens rather than search. But so for all different setups, the approach, the training, sort of the process is always the same. So the is in two parts. First, the dog is taught to recognize the odor of positive samples as salient. And this is called stimulus response. When the dog has learns that there's a salient odor, then they have a response to the stimulus. Secondly, the dogs are taught to communicate to the trainer what he has found. And to do that, the dog is taught to use conventional signals, such as sitting down in front of a positive sample or walking away from a negative sample. And this is called operant response. So the dog is trained to use a particular behavior to communicate for the benefit of the human, to disambiguate, again, the ambiguity issue, to communicate. But that's where the problems exist, in this operant part of the process. So there are a few issues that, first of all, this approach only allows the dog to give binary response. So say, yes, there's something here, no, there is nothing here. But samples are not all the same. You can have a sample that is very positive, a sample that is completely negative, but you can have all sorts of things in between. And the other thing is that the dog in this way, it is down to the dog to translate it for the benefit of the human. So there is this translation overhead for the dog, which gets in the way. And that lowers the reliability of the dog's work, particularly at very low thresholds. I'm going to show you some patterns, some examples of what happens, what the issue. So for example, this pattern is called head flick, okay? And that's how the train is described. So the dog has an appropriate stimulus response to the sample, but is in automatic operant mode, so he moves away too quickly only to realize that he needs to go back. Now, it is difficult for the trainer to spot the stimulus response before the dog moves on and give timely feedback, which is critical. The trainers use a clicker to when the dog does something right, the trainer clicks immediately as a signal to the dog that, yes, you're correct, and then gives a reward. But if the click comes too late, you know, if the behavior, the operant response, is disconnected from the stimulus response, then the trainer cannot click, because that would send the wrong, you know, would send the wrong message, and it will mess up the training.